and welcome to the Hear It podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Roberts, and I'll be speaking with guests on their campaigns, insights and ideas to better engage youth audiences. I really hope you like it. This episode, we welcome Brett Booth onto the show. Brett is a former partner of Nerds, a UK youth agency that merges creative design, music and street life together to provide marketing solutions for major brands and celebrate artists and youth voice. He's worked on some of the coolest campaigns out there, helping brands connect with youth audiences and maintain their relevance. Now working as a consultant, strategist and mentor, he continues to talk about the importance of good insight to inform campaigns that actually deliver for brands and young people. Brett, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Rebecca. Yeah, thank you for having me.
So take us back. How did you get into youth marketing and like what has kept you at it?
In all honesty, it really starts with culture. I was very active in the cultural kind of space, music really being my first love. And that was the first kind of culture marketing or marketing thing that I ever really did, you know, running nights, promoting nights, that kind of stuff. So I didn't really ever think about it as marketing. I didn't really ever think about it as like youth marketing. I just thought about it as like creating and delivering culture for a community of like minds. I was doing that anyway. And then I was going through some like various changes in my kind of career path. I'd studied finance at university. I thought I wanted to get rich and live in the city and like do all that kind of stuff. And then I kind of tuned more into this kind of creative, culturally engaged part of my persona and basically just sort of started to lean more into that. And I was exploring ways to, let's say, make money, get up in the world and kind of be connected to my passion points. So yeah, I was kind of working in retail, working the shop floor, in the footwear industry. Yeah, and I just used to chat to a lot of people. I used to meet a lot of people and I used to pay a lot of attention to how people dressed. I used to pay a lot of attention to like what products people were going for. I used to pay a lot of attention to, you know, the why. I used to ask people like, oh, right, that's interesting you picked that up. What's so interesting about that? And I didn't realize that I was basically doing the job of like research and insight before I even understood what that was. And it wasn't until I started to meet other people that came into the store that were representing brands, working for brands. And I would just get chatting to them and they would ask me questions about, oh, what's popular? What's selling? What's good? What's bad? You know, who's buying this? Who's buying this? I would just tell them and they would say, how do you know all this? And I say, it's because I chat to everyone. And they said, oh, cool. Here's my business card. I'll pay you and maybe you can write a report for me on like what's cool and interesting or what seems to be trending or whatever. And I remember just thinking, well, I can get paid for that. That's crazy. And that was it, really. It started from there. I just realized that something I was naturally doing, something I was like really interested in, someone was going to be willing to pay me at some point. So it was then my ambition to find out, well, how much can I actually get paid for this? How, you know, who can I work for? How can I start adding this stuff to some sort of CV and unlocking more job opportunities in that space? And that was really, that's really, really the beginning of everything.
It sounds so simple, right? That you're just interested in people and you listen to them and they don't see you as, you know, I'm being asked all these questions and put on the spot and it's this natural dialogue. And like brands lose that, but they're kind of obsessed with what people really think. I think youth marketing has this mystique about it often. What do you think are those common misconceptions? I think it is this obsession that youth is moved so fast they can't possibly know what they want.
If I'm really honest, I think the whole idea of like the fast moving youth landscape is wielded regularly to instill fear in clients and to make people feel like they just don't know, so they need to pay you to do the task, right? So that's the reality of it. I know that's definitely like how it works sometimes. On the other side, I guess it's just about the fact that when we're talking about younger audiences and we're talking about the increasing importance of culture as a way to enter their world, I think we get into the space where the industry is full of people that are not really culture first. You know, I describe my entry to the industry, it's purely culture first. But I think there's a majority of people who are responsible for reaching younger audiences that don't have that. So for them, it's really important to engage specialists, to say, I don't know, and to be honest about the fact that they don't have an initial foot in the door to start thinking about real, honest, authentic engagement of audiences.
Yeah, there is that kind of often used, like, all I expect is one young person. One person can't represent all young people. And I kind of think older people are kind of put in that kind of bracket, like, you're over 60, you're all the same. But I think young people are as well, like, as one homogenous group. And we talked a little bit before we recorded about how we can improve our research and insight to really understand that cultural touch point or understand young people. How do you approach that?
A lot of this work happens in the agency context. There's a pace to it. which means that a lot of the real nuanced kind of filtering that needs to happen to ensure you're speaking to exactly the right representation of your audience, that kind of gets lost or it kind of gets missed. It's really important, I think, for those that are responsible for that element, that research insight kind of application, mainly more in the sort of strategic team space, that group need to be really tight about who it is they're actually trying to speak to, trying to learn from, trying to unearth those kind of like truths from. Because without that tight initial kind of focus, you're always going to end up with, oh, we've got 10 people that represent 16 to 24s in London. And it's like, well, maybe your campaign that you're working on has a very specific commercial objective, you know, to sell product through a very specific kind of retail platform. And yet the people that you're presented as your research participants don't really prioritize shopping in that place, don't really represent the majority of the people that shop in that place. So again, I think it just comes back to the idea of being tighter. I think the landscape generally is fragmenting. I think there are a number of, you know, people talk about a lot about subcultures, and that actually is a whole nother thing. I think this idea of saying subcultures are the new like segments, that I don't buy into at all.
That is always something though, isn't it? Like, and now there's subcultures in Gen Z. It's like, when has there not been subcultures in society?
There's definitely people out there that know more about this than me. But, you know, the beginning of youth culture is traced back to the sort of like post-Second World War era and this kind of like change in lifestyle and whatnot, right? We don't need to have a whole history lesson about it, but that's the beginning of kind of youth cultures and expression of youth in those ways. And like different tribes and different kind of aesthetics are kind of starting to come through. So we're in a position where, okay, there's never been a time when tapping into a youth cultural expression has never been a useful or powerful tool to market. Think about all the types of music that have come before where we are right now. All of those relied on tapping into that kind of like dominant or attractive youth cultural expression that had the ability to influence people at scale. And I just don't see that where we're at right now is any different. It's still the same. It's still particular groups. And we talked about this before, right? There's still a heavy, heavy, heavy reliance on predominantly working class, multicultural youth cultures and expressions to allow brands to enter and influence like a broader youth segment. And I think that's something that's kind of quite sensitive. And I think it's something that people need to get better at. And I think it's something that will be talked about in a lot more detail in the next years to come. And I think we're going to see hopefully see some improvements and some new ways of operating so that there's a more equitable kind of representation, engagement, share of that kind of like investment from a sort of commercial point of view, from campaign money, to actually go back into these cultural spaces where a lot of influence is emanating from.
So a lot of people who listen and I speak to go, yeah, we've got a youth board or we've got a youth parliament group, and they're quite self-selecting young people. And I always think, like, I think with any audience group, I don't think this is like exclusive to young people, but you have to work that bit hard to get, you know, like especially if you've got like a panel of teenagers, you know, you might have one loud voice, and depending on the subject, they're not necessarily going to open up about a specific, you know, issue. Like, I've just done one about like sexual consent, and it was exactly the same. Like, we had to work hard to listen to people and provide a way they could, you know, give that feedback. And it was a whole mix. And you mentioned one campaign you did around money and the importance of mixing, not just kind of that broader piece, but that ability to speak to people one-on-one in a space that they felt comfortable. Can you talk about how you might structure that? Like, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't have the money to research. It's not necessarily about these huge, like, YouGov polls. It's kind of sometimes the simple stuff, right, and speaking to people.
You just have to start by reminding yourself that the whole idea of speaking to a stranger about something you've never really thought about in your day-to-day experience is kind of an alien thing to do. So straight away, it's like you're asking someone to engage in something that's quite alien. So that affects their ability to even share or give or allow you to see how they truly are thinking, feeling, and operating in that space. To your point, it was like, it was about money skills. It was about financial literacy. It was about trying to work out, particularly kids from like less affluent backgrounds. It was trying to work out like how to get them closer to money skills and like financial literacy. You know, the reality was money's a sensitive thing. Being poor is a very sensitive thing. It's like most kids that come from that background are doing everything they possibly can to project the fact that they're not poor. So to try and get kids into like a focus group room and say, oh, tell me how it is to be poor, and tell me how you feel about money, and tell me how bad you are at like money, thinking about money. It's like, it's not something that's going to happen in a natural like you say, fair, truthful way. So the thing to do really in that instance was take more time, invest more time, speak on a one-to-one level, try and put people in the room, researchers in the room that are going to be able to put that person in a comfortable position, make them feel like, okay, this is an on the level conversation. And I think that's a really powerful thing to be able to do straight away, is just get someone to feel like I can talk however I want to talk, and I can share my thoughts on this thing in exactly the way I would with my mates, so that I can be really real about it. And then that person is the translator. That person's going to take that information and, you know, flip it and you know, reframe it so that the client understands exactly what's going on. And the way to do that was to actually say, well, what's the space that we can get a one-to-one face-to-face conversation with this type of person? And it's about going into a physical place of comfort or neutral ground, let's say. So in that instance, it was about saying, cool, we want to speak to kids in Doncaster around financial literacy. So what are we going to do? Okay, well, there's a youth club that a lot of young people from these particular areas go to. So let's hit up the youth club and let's say, can we hire a room? Would you guys facilitate? Can you enable us to speak to, on an individual basis, one-to-one, kids from the area about money? And of course, like, they were like, yeah, that sounds great. It's a positive impact, because by doing the research, you're actually marketing, which is something I always talk about as well, is like, by actually doing the research, you're actually marketing, you're actually seeding the idea of like, financial literacy is a thing. Someone's out there that actually wants to teach you. There is something maybe you haven't thought about. So all of that stuff happened in that project in that way. And I think there's a lot of great considerations that could be carried forward in a variety of projects.
Yeah, definitely. I think we'll see more as well of like that feedback, so the young people feel like by giving their time up, they actually contribute to something, because that's something we often don't do. It's like, oh yeah, that focus group happened, brilliant. I just did one where we kind of said, oh, by the way, here's all the resources. That's really nice, going like, actually, they kind of see the value of what they've delivered. So how can any brand or organisation work on how they appeal to a youth segment? Anything, any like tips or things to avoid?
I would just say avoid the generic reports that are out there, first and foremost. It's like anyone who says, this is Gen Z, that put that in the bin straight away. It's like, that's not going to help you. It's just in my experience, the amount of times I've been brought into a room to receive a brief around some kind of like youth marketing strategy, youth marketing kind of campaign, you get taken through the insight and the strategy, and it's the classic thing. It's like all Gen Z are really hyped about streetwear culture, or you know, every kid wants to be like on Hypebeast or something like that, right? You know, just as an example, it's just not true. It's just not true. It just really depends which part of the spectrum you're trying to engage. And I just always just say, what is the actual objective? What's the actual thing you're trying to do here? Who's going to actually do that thing? Or who are you trying to get to do that thing? And then it's like, who's going to influence that person to do that thing? And that often isn't the straightforward, like, oh, it's got to be an article on Hypebeast, or it's got to be, you know, on a certain like big platform. It's got to be on Vice, for example. It's like, no. That's not the only source of influence. In fact, I would say it's hardly even an important source of influence for the majority of young people. I'm talking mainly like UK as well right now, but again, the same can be said for like European or international markets. It's just, who are you really trying to connect to? And I would always say the first thing you can think about is, are we talking about masses who have different ideologies to the niche or the more affluent? You know, it's really like at that first level, you can say, what's the main dominant ideology for the part of this Gen Z spectrum that we're trying to connect to? And that for me is always like a really important starting point, because I think you can correct and set clients' understanding from a different place if you can understand that bit. And of course, we have a naturally biased industry, because the majority of people are university educated, white middle class people. And that, you know, that's just the truth. That's just what it is. So by default, that is a small representation or a small lived experience that doesn't really allow you to have that empathy, that truthful understanding, that kind of real sense of ideology that thrives in other parts of society. So for me, it's always about like, let's get deeper on that first. Let's get clearer on that first. And then let's work out what the influence could be.
That's so important, that context point. I think that's why I started sharing stuff, because it's so insulting to young people that they would all be the same. And I think also when you look at socioeconomic factors, poverty, health factors, you just, you just like, you don't have a clue what your audience might be facing. So I really like that, like attacking the brief a little bit. You've helped a lot of brands appeal and remain relevant to youth audience. How do you hold a mirror up to that client? I was kind of touching on that before, I guess, that thinks they know what's relevant from their own perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as you said, we kind of spoke about it on the phone prior to this. Yeah, I mean, look, it's something that definitely happens and it can be quite difficult to navigate because, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to tell the person who's potentially going to pay you that they are overstepping the mark. But it's really important to do it because it has to come down to the simple idea of it's not what you personally think is cool. No one's in this room judging you or assessing you based on what you think is cool. It's unfortunate. There's just quite a lot of people, I think, who feel that they're in their position or in their job or in their role because they have a personal understanding of something that's cool. And that's totally fine. It's good to have cool, interesting, creative people around, you know, to draw in. But again, it's that classic thing of who's the actual audience? And then it's like, what's actually cool to them? And again, what's creating that cool? What are the sort of like dynamics of influence that are kind of taking place? It's like, that's what you need to unpick. That's where you need to work out how to show up or how to start to move and be relevant. It's not going to be necessarily the person who's got the most expensive clothes in the office is going to be the person that knows what that cool is. So it's about being honest and stepping back and saying, cool is always contextual. Cool is always like different to different people. Focus on finding that and surfacing that and being tight on that as well. Because as soon as you start to get a watered down interpretation of that, all your creative starts to fall out. Then the whole strategy falls apart. And then what you end up with at the end is like campaigns that don't really speak to anyone in any particular way because they just veered away and people were putting their own personal ideas of what's cool in the mix. And yeah, it happens a lot. I've seen it a lot. And you know, I said ages ago, it's like, yeah, I've got some ideas. I think I know what's cool. I know what's cool for me, but it's like, I'm not the target audience. So it's totally irrelevant. I'm not even going to talk about it. It's like, let's just talk about what's actually cool to the audiences we're trying to speak to, trying to engage, trying to cultivate cultural equity with.
I guess it's an easy trap to fall into, right? You either employ someone that's young and then you go, well, they've said this, and back to my point before, you know, they're of the target audience or that age, but they don't represent everyone. It goes back to like having a proper strategy and a proper plan to how you listen to that audience. And actually, personal opinion doesn't matter. Like, even if you were that target age bracket, which sadly I'm very much not, it doesn't really matter. One person's view isn't, you can't base a whole campaign around that. So I think that's a really important thing to remember. And also when you manage it, you know, I hear it a lot from like higher ed, for example, and they're like, oh, the vice chancellor thinks this. And it's like, just say they're not the target audience. And I think if you could provide that insight and research and youth voice, it's hard to argue against that because you go like, this is what we're looking at. It's a proper plan. It's not just like, we thought this was cool, so we did it. It's just a lot more robust. Last one, what sort of brands or campaigns that you see do you think do a really good job or that you always look forward to kind of seeing when it comes to like engaging in people?
I'll probably contradict myself a little bit here because I would creatively immediately call up, well, not recently, but like in a couple of years before, brands like Palace, you know, the skate brand. Some of their campaign content literally set the bar and just changed the way people think about how you should invest in content. Creatively, I say I rate that and there's an audience for that and all that kind of stuff. But then again, like there's a whole spectrum of like Gen Z. So, and I often talk about footwear and fashion because to be honest, if you ask most Gen Z, one of the main things they think about the most and consider spending the most money on is footwear first and then it's fashion. And then after that, everything else kind of, you know, is mostly secondary. An interesting one to keep an eye on is actually the Jordan brand, because whilst everybody always talks about Nike, I think it's really interesting to see the moves that the Jordan brand has made in order to distance itself or cut itself out or own its own piece of the kind of Gen Z youth cultural kind of like consumer landscape. The kinds of things that they're doing, I think, are going to be interesting to watch. And then realistically, everybody's talking about Gen Z native entrepreneurs in the fashion space, right? So you can't really talk about this stuff without mentioning people like Clint and the Cortez brand. It's just like a powerhouse and a huge lesson for anyone watching and listening around marketing, engaging youth audiences, building that concept of community, creating a desire, creating kind of like cultural equity, delivering against that for that community's needs. I think that's just a really interesting one to look at. But then I also go broader and just say, there are others moving in the same way. And one of my favorite ones to just keep an eye on at the moment is a brand called Tax 3. It's the similar thing. It's like a tracksuit brand, and they just exactly worked out who their target audience is. They show up exactly where they know that target audience is most highly engaged. And I've just like really enjoyed seeing them kind of focusing in and really putting effort into getting visibility that is continuing to feed that kind of awareness and desire and, again, cultural equity. So those kinds of brands, I just feel those can be lessons for a lot of people.
Thanks for listening to the Hear It podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate, review and subscribe, as it really helps others find us. You can also follow us on Twitter @HearItPodcast or drop us a message by emailing info@threadandfable.com.